Is the Lord among us or not? In the name of God who comes to us at high noon at the well. Amen. When I was a little girl, I learned to be thankful for the blessings all around me through those familiar parental sayings. When I didn't want to eat my dinner, especially my vegetables, green peas, or lima beans, my mother would say, "Remember all those starving children in Africa." I also learned not to leave the refrigerator door open as I wandered around the kitchen. I learned to turn off lights in a room when I left. I also learned to conserve water. "Don't leave the water running," one of my parents would say, whether it was the garden hose or the kitchen or bathroom sinks. Water and food, electricity and shelter. Parts of life we often take for granted, but essential blessings. In Japan these days, water is a mixed blessing. Water is the bringer of destruction, but it is also the very necessary element of life. When the radiation from the damaged nuclear plants began to affect Tokyo's water, things became even more real for all of us. What would it be if we did not have easy, bounteous access to water? How would we live differently? Would our thankfulness change? Would we work together or grow further apart? The Japanese are a people who have known war and destruction and tragedy in the not-so-recent past. They lived through Hiroshima and Nagasaki and have, for the most part, banded together. Yesterday's front photo on the Saturday New York Times shows two elderly men chatting in a makeshift public bath set up near a shelter for those left homeless by the tsunami in northeastern Japan. The article says this: "To an outsider, much is striking about Japan's response to 2 weeks of serial disasters. The stoicism and self-sacrifice, the quiet bravery in the face of tragedy that seems woven into the national character. But just as striking, however, is that evacuees here live in a place that can kennel your dog, charge your cell phone, fix your dentures, and even provide that non-negotiable of Japanese life, a steamy soak in a hot tub of water. But there is more to the efficiency of the Japanese. Mr. Yanashita, who's 66 years old, lost his entire barbershop in the tsunami and earthquake. He and his son, Noriaki, who's 34, set up shop in the shelter to give free haircuts. Mr. Yanashita said, "We have to support each other, and this is what I know how to do." There are grievances, to be sure, but I'm guessing in Japan not as many grievances as the Israelites had with Moses in the wilderness. In the wilderness, yet again, the issues centered around what they did not have once they left Egypt. This time, water. At Rephidim, there was no water to drink, so a quarrel erupted with Moses. "Give us water to drink," they cried. And soon the discussion or quarrel degenerated into, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt in the first place? To kill us and our children and livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed Moses how to provide water. When disaster and loss and heartache strike, we all wonder, is God among us or not? Where is God right now? And in the absence of God, we make sure we humans work to get what we need, often at the expense of others. Instead of working together, we fight, we grow apart, we get our own, and then we leave. Back in Japan, where the Japanese people's legendary endurance is in full display, unlike the testy wilderness Israelites in Exodus, a curious thing happens at night in these makeshift shelters in northeastern Japan. When all is quieted down in the busy tent, everyone is trying to sleep on their little mats, their dog on their mat next to them. Some are snoring, but soon into the wee hours of the night, lone figures gather at the space heaters set up in the shelter. Yukiko Yamaguchi, who is 73 years old, lost her home in the tsunami. She is one of them that gathers at the heater. She is in the wilderness of her life. And in the middle of the night, when she can't sleep, she seeks warmth, but most likely companionship for her wilderness time. Maybe that's what brought the Samaritan woman to Jacob's well that day. A thirst for water, but a longing for something more. A longing to know if there really was a God that cared about her. In her life of ruined relationships, was there any greater force of love anywhere? Perhaps she woke up that day, like many days, wanting to give up. But that day she got out of bed, up off her mat most likely, and she comes to Jacob's well in the heat of the day, hoping to be alone, for her thirst to be quenched, and perhaps, just perhaps this day, for her soul to be soothed and fed. And when she arrived, there was a man, a Jewish man, and he asks her for a drink, and she responds. And in that moment, a whole world of healing and of God opens out to her in that moment. Because she chose that day to get off her mat and keep going. Joseph Marshall, in his book, Keep Going, The Art of Perseverance, I've talked about this recently, told the story from his grandfather, Old Hawk. Joseph Marshall was confused and in pain and grief from his own father's recent death, and his grandfather, Old Hawk, told him this story. Dear grandson, I know you feel that life has knocked you down. Though not on purpose, it probably feels that way. Your grandmother and I felt the very same way when we lost our eldest child. Our little boy was born in the spring and died in the winter when the Spanish flu came through here. That sickness broke many hearts at that time, and life did knock us down. At that point in our lives, it was the very worst thing that could ever have happened. Your grandmother blamed herself for not being a good enough mother. But the reality was the Spanish flu took the weakest, meaning the very old and the very young. So we held on to each other and got through the bad time. Life knocked us down, but we stood up again. And when we did, we realized that the birth of that little boy taught us what the bond between man and woman can withstand. His death taught us that we can be strong. If it is true that strength is the child of effort and pain, then most of us will have the opportunity to learn strength. This is your opportunity, grandson, Old Hawk said. Effort is standing up in the storm. Pain comes from enduring the worst that the storm can throw at us. But then, so does strength. We can decide to yield to the storm by staying down, or we can stand once more and face it, knowing that it will pass. Standing up to the storm, no matter how many times it blows us down, should teach us that we don't need to be as powerful as the storm to defy it. We only need to be strong enough to stand up. Let's say that again. Standing up to the storm, no matter how many times it blows us down, should teach us that we don't need to be as powerful as the storm to defy it. We only need to be strong enough to stand. That's all we can do some days when we're in the throes of grief or loss or tragedy beyond our imagining. Just get out of bed and stand up. The Israelites learned that in the wilderness. The Samaritan woman learned what happened when she stood up and went to Jacob's well. The Japanese and the Haitians and those in Thailand and in New Zealand, in Libya, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and the list goes on and on, know that truth as well. We stand up and we walk and seek companionship with others as we walk the way of the cross. In the musical Godspell, there is a moment that comes and reminds me that even though we may not see Jesus sitting at our wells, Jesus is here every Sunday. At this table, at this altar, we have Jesus in the bread and the wine. We have Jesus with each other. Because one day, each of us, all of us, will have those days where we do not want to stand up in the storm. But we do, because Jesus is here. Amen.